the Lenswipe Photography Podcast. It's where Canon and Nikon shooters can get together and fight. And now your host, Mark Sadowski.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Lenswipe Photography Podcast. I usually say some playful banter here, but I gotta say, we got an email from somebody who claims that we were ripping off This American Life. And I gotta say, the Lenswipe is not ripping off This American Life. I don't know where they got that stupid idea, but coming up on the Lenswipe Photography Podcast, Act 1, we go into introductions. Act 2, we go into talk about Doc Popular's really cool project. And Act 3, we talk about some other photography-related stuff, but it'll probably be sidetracked with a bunch of tangents and poorly placed audio clips.
Don't forget Act 4, we crash
it. Yeah. I hope somebody got that joke. There we go. Anyway, I'm Mark Sadowski, and joining me this week, we have Maud Byrne. How's it going, Maud?
I am good.
We have Joe Ferreira.
Greetings, everyone.
And we have Matt Hoffman.
I'm doing well. Just surfing porn on my iPhone.
There you go. Hopefully Apple doesn't ban that. And joining us this week, a very special guest, we have Doc Popular. He is here to talk about his very cool project. And how's it going, Doc?
It's going super well. How are you guys?
We're doing awesome. We're getting ready for a super serious blizzard here in the Northeast, except for Joe, who's apparently having 60-degree weather.
It's like springtime here in the South.
Again, shut up, Joe.
I like the idea of a super serious blizzard, like a blizzard of seriousness, raining down, no snow, just seriousness piling up.
It's everywhere. Hey, the news reports do that, not us.
That's Washington, D.C.
No, yeah, that's true. But you're calling from California, aren't you?
Yeah. It's a little chilly out in California right now, but it's kind of hard to complain, I guess, relatively. Yes.
what's your version of chilly?
What's a little chilly to you?
You know, 69.
Whoa!
It's 50 or something.
I was born and raised in the Bay Area, so I understand.
Yeah. You acclimate quickly. I mean, I moved here from Minneapolis, and I was complaining about 60-degree weather, like, almost within a week.
My wife and I went to Florida a few years back before the kids were born. She had a conference out there for her hospital, and we went probably during the coldest year in New England, and so, you know, we were totally looking forward to Florida weather. But the problem is Florida was experiencing their coldest day of the week of the year. And so we had to tolerate like 40, 50 degree weather down there. But meanwhile, in New England, it was like negative 10, negative 15. So it's like, I'll take it. So we go down there and we're driving through Orlando, and sure enough, everybody is wearing these winter jackets. They're all bundled up, mittens, scarves, hats. And you could totally tell the tourists from the locals because of the way they were dressed. In fact, I was in the hotel and one guy walks in with his shorts and t-shirts. And I'm like, how far north are you from? He looks at me. I'm like, I'm from Connecticut. I'm like, oh, yeah. How'd you know? Lucky guess. So anyway. There we go. So anyway, we're here to talk to Doc Popular. Doc, you have a really cool Kickstarter project that's going on right now. And those of you who don't know, our sister podcast, The Tiny Shutter, Doc has been really active over there on that side, working with Postagram. And are you still with Postagram?
No, not with Postagram anymore.
That's right. I remember seeing your announcement on, I think it was on Instagram that I saw that. But anyway, you did a lot of work with us through there. We had a lot of cool stuff going on through there. But now you're working on this project. So why don't you tell us about your project and what is this project, American Analog?
So American Analog is a black and white photo zine. It's just a collection of my own photography, 35 millimeter shot on Tri-X and Arista Premium, which is just pretty much a knockoff of Tri-X film. And it's kind of cliche, but like, the week I got laid off, I I, you know, started growing a beard and launched a Kickstarter. I think both of those things are, at least around here in the Bay Area, that's like, I'm going to finally finish my Kickstarter campaign is like the new, I'm going to finish writing that book or whatever. It's just what people do, I guess.
And, you know, that's amazing that you make that, draw that parallel, because that's exactly how I'm seeing things now.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a year's worth of photos that I've been kind of collecting to do in a zine format. And for those unfamiliar, zines are just kind of self-published, small run independent, you know, magazines or whatever. And usually they could be like, reviews of shows or music reviews or whatever. But the stuff I kind of grew up on was stuff like Hamburger Eyes and Comet Bus, which were, had some photography in them.
Yeah.
So like finally putting together my photos this way is kind of a goal. And like you mentioned, you know, I was doing iPhone stuff for so long, that all my iPhone photography was on, Instagram and Flickr, but, I felt it was just kind of better to do this as a little booklet. And so I'm launching a Kickstarter just to be able to, work directly with printers. And instead of doing a $30 booklet, I'm hoping to do $5 to $10, you know, retail. So we'll see if we can make that happen.
Really cool. What inspired you to do this project? Like, what was your impetus for making this e-zine?
One thing was a lot of my friends who are photographers, they have these really great looking books, and I really really like their books, but they're $30 to $50 sometimes.
Yeah.
And you're sort of like, I totally don't regret buying this from you, but if I bought this in a store, if I saw it in a store, I don't know if I'd buy it. You know, I wanted to have something inspired by what they were doing, you know, actually on paper and printed. But, I wasn't wanting to imagine myself as a complete stranger. You know, if I saw this on the shelf, would I buy it? And, you know, for maybe $8 or something, I would. So that was the whole process, started just with the goal of, you know, kind of doing a cheaper book. Of my photography.
Nice.
Yeah.
I've got a quick question for you. You said you've already started talking and working with the printers?
Yeah, before you know, the whole job thing and everything, I was already pricing the book, and I have a, you know, print ready PDF that I've been, you know, showing around to printers and getting quotes. And so that whole process started before I even launched the Kickstarter.
And do you think you're going to be able to hit your goal of a $5-$8 book?
I'm hoping so. The reason I sound kind of a little unsure is because I've gotten the quotes and everything, but I've backed I think I've backed 25 successful Kickstarters. You know, I've pledged for close to 100 that didn't go through or whatever, and I keep seeing with everybody who thinks they know what they're doing and they seem to know what they're doing, all these unexpected things come up. So
yeah.
I actually added mine, you know, so that I won't get screwed by shipping. I won't get screwed by printers. Best case, I'll hopefully be able to throw in some extra goods. Worst case, I'll ship for the price that I, you know, say. But getting $5 retail is going to be tough, because that means that I want my cost to be around $1.50 per book.
Right.
And that I've been quoted that, but like, you never know if that's going to, you know, if I get a dummy copy and I'm just not happy with it.
Yeah, printing is a tricky beast.
Yeah.
The other thing that you got to worry about, I guess, with Kickstarter projects is there's a group of people out there that will fund a Kickstarter, but then pull out at the last minute. The people kind of like pranking a Kickstarter project. So that's the other thing that people kind of pad for.
Yeah, that would suck.
But you seem to be on track. You seem to be doing pretty well. You got 13 days to go, and I'm looking at it, and you're really close to 3,000. So everything's, you know, knock on wood. I mean, I can't, because that'll mess up my microphone. But, you know, in spirit, I am.
I'll do it for you.
There you go.
Is 3,000 the goal, or was what was your goal?
The goal's 5,000, and that's actually to fund the first two issues. San Francisco, next one will be New York, and it's on track. I've broken 50%, so statistically speaking, I'm kind of I'm kind of in the clear.
Yeah.
Love to go, but that being said, there's definitely been this like dovetail effect. The thing I'm hoping for more than anything else is just to see people watching the video, because you get stats on the video. I'm just happy if people watch the video and see what the project's about. Mm-hmm. And then I'm also really happy to see names that I don't recognize, because, you know, I'm not trying to just tap all my friends or whatever, but I'm hoping people will watch the video, like the photography, and like the idea of a little zine and
yeah,
fund it.
Yeah, that's, I mean, the unfortunate thing, and I was talking to Maude Byrne about this just a couple of days ago, is that with the whole digital age, we've kind of lost literal touch with our photos. I was feeling a little, a tinge of burnout with my photography, mainly because it in some ways, it's intangible. It's just some image on a screen rather than something that I'm actually holding. I don't know if that was kind of like your experience for making the actual physical old school analog, American analog.
That was probably a pretty good case for what I was going for. I mean, my first camera was the iPhone.
Yeah.
And I got hardcore into that for about a year and a half before I started doing film. And I got really lucky with the iPhone just through timing and everything else, where I got like these, good contacts with press and stuff. But then I remember the first time I got into film and developed my own roll of film. I don't know. It was like a secret thing I kept doing. Like, in order to see them, you kind of had to like hang out and like, I'd like throw you some prints and you'd throw me some prints or whatever. It felt like a very thing.
All right, Maude, this is all in your court. You're the film guy.
I love film, and I would love to go back into. And Joe was just saying before the show that he's getting ready to install a darkroom, and I'm all jealous now. I miss film. I miss doing that. That's so much fun.
I got a question. And this goes to back to when you first started to do the film. How much of the iPhone experience were you able to bring into doing the film?
A lot. I mean, for me, the iPhone was good for practicing composition and everything without the cost of film. Or, I mean, if I was trying to learn photography on film, it would have been a total, like the whole learning curve would have been way off.
Right. It would have been a lot more expensive, that's for sure.
Yeah, not even like in the literal cost of film, but just in you spend a week shooting, or maybe a couple of days shooting one roll, and then, you know, maybe you don't develop it for a week later, and then you check it out and you did something wrong, and yep. It's like a week apart or whatever, rather than that instantaneous kind of thing.
Or Walmart screws up your roll of film, and then you're like, hey, this isn't how it was, and they're like,
My first roll of film, I pulled it out and I said, after I developed it, I showed the instructor, I was like, it's all clear. He goes, yeah, it didn't get, it didn't see any light.
It's nice from iPhone or digital in general, right? To film, just because you're not learning all the things. You've already figured out a lot of stuff. All you have to do now is figure out like manual focus and exposure, and depending on your camera, which the cameras I'm using, oftentimes they're all fully manual. Right. So you don't have to worry about that.
Did the fact that you couldn't see the photos, what did that do to you?
The process became much slower. So instead of just taking an infinite number of photos that just kind of sat on my roll, it became a little bit more intentional, but not too, like, I was still trying to get like candid shots and, you know, street photography. So I wasn't staging anything and worrying about lights, but, generally I would really think just for a second whether or not I actually wanted that photo, which previously would never cross into your mind.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, when you were, going back to the project itself, did you have a plan in mind, like themes in mind for each magazine? Like, you have two that are pretty much finished. They're laid out, if I'm not mistaken.
one's close to the finish. That's New York street photography, and the first one's San Francisco. And the those were both kind of shaped out of photos I had already.
Mm-hmm.
But being that I kind of have those issues, the second one close to finish, the first one finish. If I do make it to a third issue, which is beyond the Kickstarter goal, and just kind of if everything's going great and I keep doing this, I've already started shooting a special theme of food, which is like, I've actually, you know, we have a lot of pop-up chefs and lots of great restaurants around here. And I've actually been working my way into the kitchens.
Nice.
I'm filming some shots of people eating that are a little more interesting than that sounds.
No, that sounds really cool. With the whole, you know, the print version, do you have any plans of actually making a digital distribution in addition to the print? Like, I know it's kind of counterproductive, and it's something called American Analog, but do you have a iPad version that you're thinking about making in addition to the print?
I'm certainly not like a analog purist, and I have no problems with digital. But the one problem that's come up that was really unexpected was the way I laid out my book for print. When people see it digitally, mm-hmm. the pictures seem to run together. Like, they keep saying they want borders around the pictures, where I don't want borders. I just want. And that was a really unexpected thing, because I thought for sure. I mean, I read lots of stuff on iPads.
Yeah.
Yeah, this would be just an iPad / zine book. But then as I was working on it, I really found I had to kind of pick whether I wanted it to look good on. I mean, for instance, a really good example is most of the time when you're looking at a book on your iPad, you're looking at one page at a time.
Right.
And my book has some, you know, two up spreads where I've got, you have to see, you know, kind of the centerfold or whatever. You have to see it all at one shot. But then other pages are a single page or whatever. And that works with the book. But with the PDFs, just people had a hard time figuring out, like, it felt like the book kept changing sizes to them.
Is this a full bleed print that you're putting in these books?
It sure is. Full bleed with like seven words in the whole book. Just okay. Just photos, like street photos, just side by side, no explanations and no borders.
Nice. Well, that's very cool. Do you guys have any other questions for Doc?
I had a question.
Go ahead.
Did you purchase baseball cards when you were a kid?
No. Garbage Pail Kid cards.
Oh, Garbage Pail. We won't even go there because I can talk about that all night. All right, garbage, that works. For me, doing the – I just wanted to make a comment and just see how it was.
I'm curious where you're going with this.
Well, coming from digital, you know, with the instant gratification, everything, you see it as soon as you take it. That was something that I really do enjoy about digital, because I started in film, and moving to digital, that was one of the best things of it. You didn't have to wait a week, or in my case, you know, way up in Maine, sometimes I would wait months before developing a roll of film. However, there is also the flip side of that is it's when you take a roll of film and you wait a while to develop it, when you finally do develop it, it's kind of like a kid opening a pack of baseball cards or Garbage Pail Kids, and you're always a little bit of excitement, like, what am I going to get? You know, I don't really remember what I took pictures of, or even I vaguely remember, but I don't remember if I think I had anything really good on here. And there's always that little bit of excitement, like, am I going to get a really good shot? Did you encounter any of that yourself?
And that's so true. That's such a good – yeah, totally. I mean, like, there's – just like with the cards, sometimes you're just happy to get one good card in the pack.
Exactly.
I actually have an audio clip of my daughter opening a baseball card. Not as impressed. I guess it's too early for her.
What do you have? Is this going to be purely your project, or are you going to have any collaborations in the future?
I've had people ask about that, and I think it just my main goal is to ship these two issues this year. And if I love, like, seriously, if I love putting together zines and InDesign and working with printers, then I could totally see myself doing this. And I know, I know some people who do love that. I have a feeling that I'll come September when the second issue comes out, I'll be so happy to like put away in design for a while. I don't know yet.
I hear it.
I love it. Yeah, totally. I know so many photographers that I'd like to collect their works.
Nice. All right. Very cool. Well, it was great to talk to you about this, because this is something that I'm really looking forward to seeing this come to fruition. And when it does, I totally hope you could come back on the show to talk about it. It's really, really nice. And why don't you tell the people where they can find the Kickstarter project? Do you have a link that you want to share with them?
Yeah, an easy link is American Analog Zine, ZINE.com. And if that's too hard to remember, you could just look up like Dr. Popular on Kickstarter, and I'm sure I'll be one of the few results. Me and some
farms. you pop right up. That's what I did a little while ago.
Cool.
All right. On a little bit of a tangent, I got to know, and it's been driving me crazy ever since Tiny Shutter. How did you get the name Doc Popular?
So I've had a bunch of little tiny careers in my life, and one of them was like a radio DJ when I was a teenager. And the whole thing kind of comes from this personality I had called Dr. Stupid.
Uh-huh.
It was just kind of a show, like just a thing I used on the radio, but... When I moved to St. Louis, I found that Brian was a way more common name than it was in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And just to make it clear on myself, I just started going by Doc, just because I was not used to hearing people say Brian all the time.
Cool. It was a curiosity. I should have left it curious because
yeah.
The mystique behind it.
I'm not a doctor or popular.
I didn't go to 5 years of popular school just to be called Mr. Popular. No, that's awesome. No, you are popular, dude. You have like, you've made quite the cult following.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. Also in the news that I wanted to touch base with everybody is where is it? Now I'm going to have to edit the show. Oh, here we go. Panasonic has created a really cool innovation to photo sensors. And I don't know if you guys had the chance to take a look at it. I don't know, Maud, can you share the link with Doc?
Yeah, I'll put it
I got it right here. But essentially... it makes your image sensor take in more light, that is what it comes down to. So the sensor doesn't have to work as hard to capture the photons. And I thought this had quite interesting ramifications for both conventional photography that we do with DSLRs, point and shoots, but also mobile photography, because this, if these microscopic diffractors that help transmit the light, make it much easier and transmit the light much, much better, then it's got to mean that a small sensor like an iPhone will be able to carry a crisper, better image. What do you guys think? Why don't we start with you, Joe?
Well, I was looking at it, and they have the two images of the – it looks like – some weird box with toys in it. And I think it's great if our phones are have an easier time of collecting light, because number one, the quicker shutter times. I know a lot for the iPhone with that 1/15th of a second to capture the image, I do get a lot of blur, especially with my children who can't sit still. But also I wonder what it will do to the contrast of the image. Cause if everything becomes much brighter, you start to lose that contrast and it becomes more flat. So I don't know if you'll have to go in every time and do some, adjustments like with, oh man, my mind just went blank with Snapseed, mm-hmm. or is, you know, how the quality of the images are going to be right off the bat.
I get the impression it's more of increasing your ISO type of thing. Like the fact that it can now capture more light is going to make it a little bit more sensitive in low light conditions, capture more light, but you can always stop it down. You can always reduce the amount of light. So if it is blowing it out, making a little bit, reducing the contrast, there's nothing to say you can't, you know, bring down the f-stop or up the, whichever way it goes, I don't know. but there's nothing to say you can't adjust for that with your camera settings to get, you know, back to where you want to be. This is just going to make it easier or more flexibility for taking photos in lower light conditions and getting richer colors in the normal conditions.
Matt, you use you're the one who uses the Micro Four Thirds camera. You have a sweet Sony camera. How does that take photos for you?
Well, typically I push the shutter button.
How is the image quality on that one? Like, do you encounter? I haven't used that camera. Last I heard that it had some noise issues and stuff. But you think that something like this would help out on your neck of the woods?
Well, I don't really know enough about the technology to know if it would help or not. As far as the Sony goes, it does have some noise issues that, I don't know, higher ISOs, it's not a, you know, a Canon or a Nikon pro DSLR that could shoot it.
And don't you forget it.
You know, I get noise at ISO 1600, but, you know, I started shooting with a Pentax K1000 and had to use, you know, T-Max 3200 if I needed to shoot in low light. So a little bit of noise doesn't bother me that much because the grain on that film back when I was shooting film was like golf balls. You know, and then I actually posted a photo on Facebook tonight of a chameleon that I shot in a zoo at like a ridiculously high ISO because the reptile exhibit was pretty low light. And the, you know, some of the noise removal software that you can get now is pretty good. So I just threw it in one of those and it took almost all the noise out. And I don't think anyone's really going to know the difference.
Cool. So
I don't think I answered your original question at all.
That's okay. I forgot my original question. So there we go. It's the circle of life.
It's a cool technology, but I don't think we'll be seeing it in iPhones. Maybe Panasonic's like a manufacturer, so they'll probably want to make their own like cell phone or camera that does this, maybe with like a smartphone or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think we probably won't see these in iPhones or too many other gadgets just because it's so heavily patented.
Right. Yeah. That's unfortunate.
We may see a Lytro in an iPhone or something like that before we see this, but it's a shame because I think this would be perfect for a smartphone.
Yeah.
That's exactly the limitations of smartphones is low light and, you know, a quicker shutter would be nice.
A whole hell of a lot more useful than a Lytro too.
Yeah.
So if I understand this correctly, it's basically just a way to gather more light.
Yes.
Yeah, the basics of it, Matt, are that when your normal sensor, all the little wires in there that actually collect the electrical signals block some of the light coming in. And they found a way to make it so the wires are not overlaying the sensor and blocking the light coming in, or to reduce that by a fair amount, so that more of the light that's hitting your sensor is actually being captured versus right now with your sensor, a lot of the light that actually hits the sensor is actually blocked and not captured at all.
Well, I'm not saying any of you are doing this, but who would make the argument that that's not beneficial?
Let's see. I'll make an argument for you. It's going to cost more.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, but I didn't say cost. I said beneficial. All right. Benefits always have a cost.
All right, look, we could all agree that we still don't find Lytro useful.
Yes, there we go. I'll second that.
Oh man, I really wish that technology would be better. Just a better photo. That's all.
I wanted to look around.
Around corners?
Yeah.
Through walls?
Yes. That'd make my job a lot easier.
There we go. All right, and finally, we have in the news, this it's kind of old news, but it's getting steam just recently, is Joe Gordon-Levitt. He's an actor who is in Batman, what is it, the latest Batman movie?
Dark Knight Rises.
Dark Knight Rises. I didn't see the flick.
He was in G.I. Joe.
Deception.
Oh, my God. Yeah, he was in G.I. Joe. Can you believe that? He was Cobra Commander.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. Yeah, he's been a lot of
spoiler.
Isn't he just in Looper?
He was that in was Looper, totally yeah.
Spoiler. Oh, yeah, yep. That looks good, too.
That was don't a forget, cool movie. Don't forget Third Rock from the Sun.
Yeah, that's where you got to start.
I think he wants you to forget Third Rock from the Sun. But anyway, the cool thing about him is that he's basically sticking at the paparazzi. Now, they don't normally hound him because he doesn't do anything stupid or goes naked in public or anything. So that immediately makes him boring. But when he was hounded by the paparazzi photographers, he basically pulled out his camera and started to shoot them. So your thoughts.
To them, what they do to him, like, you know, hey, you know, what's your name? And, you know, the whole spiel, not just taking pictures of them, but like the whole thing to them, like they do to the celebrities.
Yeah. So
they don't want, you know, they don't want somebody pointing a camera at them because that's not going to sell.
I beg to differ. I think that Joe Gordon-Levitt has opened up a huge market for celebrities. Now,
No. I'm talking about the paparazzi. He's not going to be able to make a sale.
Oh, well, forget that for a second. Okay. They're all pariahs anyway. Have you ever met a good paparazzi?
I've never met one, thank God.
So anyway, you have celebrities all carry cameras, and they essentially are with iPhones and stuff. So whenever the paparazzi come hound them, the celebs start taking pictures of them, and they can make their own magazine that they could sell amongst themselves. So you could print it at a higher cost and everything because, you know, the celebs could probably afford it.
Who's going to buy this?
Celebrities. And they could read about all the paparazzis and the celebrities, they have their own assistants, so they can go out and do the photography as well as, you know, dig up dirt on their private life. You can follow him home and see what they're doing, what they're eating for breakfast. John Smith had SpaghettiOs again this morning.
Hey, and, Doc, how high on the list of Kickstarter would this end up being?
Well, it, you know, there's a small group of celebrities out there. I don't know if you get like $1,000 each. It's still a kind of a small number.
I think this is a gold mine. I think you can, it's an untapped resource. You can sell it at a higher rate. So the $50 book might not be such a bad idea. If you just send a link to the Screen Actors Guild and, I think you gotta, it'll go like hotcakes. Boom. Next project.
All the time they spend with the paparazzi, they might actually start to notice if, like, you know, where's Jason been lately? I haven't seen him around.
Yeah.
He got hit by a car.
Ooh, too soon. Oh, is it too soon for paparazzi? That's a good question.
That was, what, a couple weeks ago?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not good when you get hit by a car going after a celebrity.
Have you guys seen the movie I think it's called 35 Millimeter, but it was a movie that was produced by Mel Gibson, and it's about a actor who is like an action star that makes it pretty big, and paparazzi are hounding him, and then they go too far, and so he snaps and starts killing him off.
I'm going to watch that right away.
Now, all right. Now, knowing that Mel Gibson made that movie, I think the paparazzi should be wary of Mel Gibson. Yeah. Well, he's the type that would snap.
At the time, I think the paparazzi were giving him a serious hard time. This is before he went all, you know, Looney Tunes.
Yeah.
And I guess he produced this film. It wasn't in theaters very long. It was like one of those January one weekend deals.
It's a B movie.
Lower the alphabet. In fact, don't use the English alphabet. Use like the Greek alphabet or something. Yeah, but I thought that'd be pretty cool to see. It's not on Netflix streaming yet, though.
Dang.
Yeah, I know.
Nothing's on Netflix streaming.
There's some actually, things on Netflix streaming.
Actually, there's. It's like walking into a video store. There's everything but what you want to watch right now.
Mm-hmm. Are you kidding? Netflix scored it big with Disney, actually. Disney.
Yeah, yes, that's
true. They just started releasing some of the newer Disneys.
So okay, let's just say that my Netflix, what's popular, is nothing but what my kids watch.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's about two-thirds of what my kids watch. It's filled with a lot of, like, and you can't even call it B-roll movies. It's filled with a lot of, like, C and D-roll movies that are just cheesy as hell. 70s
and 80s, yeah.
They're not even all that old. A lot of them are new, and I go through and watch it because there's nothing else on there to watch. And I'm one of those type of people that if I start something like a movie or book, I have to finish it.
Okay, once around the table, worst movie you've ever seen. We'll start with you, Maud.
Good Man in Africa. The worst one I ever finished, anyways.
Ah.
I've lately been not finishing them.
What do you mean, no? It's the opposite of yes. Yeah, I remember that movie. Ned, that's the best Sean Connery you'll get out of me. All right, how about you? How about you, Joe?
I can't think of one because I think I blocked it out of my mind.
All right, how about you, Doc? We'll come back to Joe.
The Amazing Spider-Man, the most recent Spider-Man movie.
Oh, really?
Oh, man. I mean, there's probably worse movies I've seen, but like that one just was so heartbreakingly disappointing. It's one of the few movies I haven't finished. Like I couldn't keep watching it.
Wow.
That never happens.
Now, what was so bad about it, apart from the fact that union workers were actually working late?
I think the fact that the most likable character in the film was like one of the bad guys or something. Like you did not like Peter Parker, and you just couldn't relate to him like you could relate. It's also one of those things they really didn't need to reinvent Spider-Man again. Like
yeah.
There's a reboot every 6 years, I think, and they just didn't need to reboot it.
Well, Sony had to because they were going to lose the rights to Spider-Man.
They didn't have to reboot it. They could have just done another freaking movie, even if they changed the actor, just – whatever. It's another movie. It's in the set beyond the last one, whatever.
I don't know. Have you seen Spider-Man 3?
All right, whatever. Just pretend it was a Highlander, and we're just going to pretend that one never happened.
You know, speaking of bad movies.
Right? All right, I got one.
Okay.
It was Star Wars 1.
Oh.
Wait a minute. Episode 1?
Phantom Menace?
Episode 1.
Okay.
Not 1970s. This is the one from like 1999.
Yeah, that was
bad.
That was, well, you know.
Yeah, that was bad. I remember being psyched to see this movie, and this is back when I was seeing my, you know, I was dating my ex at the time, and I was like, all right, if we're gonna see one, if I'm gonna drag you to one movie, it's gonna be this one. This is gonna be awesome. It's gonna have lightsabers. We've been waiting decades for this thing. This is gonna be sweet. We go in there, and the moment Jar Jar Binks shows up, I'm like, yes. What the F did I just do? Yeah. I used my one free get out of jail card just to see this crap. Yeah. Misa, show you where we go. Oh, come on, shut up.
What about you, Matt?
Yeah, man, I really don't know. I rarely watch movies, and when I do, even if they're good, I tend to forget about them like a day later.
Now, has everybody seen The Avengers?
Oh. No.
Yeah.
No.
Doc, you've seen it?
Yeah, it was surprisingly fun.
All right. Now, here's what a good director and good writers will bring to the table. Now, the last fight sequence in The Phantom Menace and The Avengers is identical. They're essentially the same fight. But you have somebody brilliant like Joss Whedon, who's good at directing, who's good at writing, makes something that was bad like The Phantom Menace and makes it good. I stand by
this?
That.
I keep trying to find a way to bring this back to like cameras or something. I'm really grasping. You know, what sort of sensor did R2-D2 have? Because, you know, those holograms. Those
duh, CMOS. CMOS Isley.
He had one of those new Panasonic sensors.
There you go. There we go. Whoa, what was that?
Rim shot.
There we go. So anyway, I think we could call it a show. We did everything that we said we'd do in the beginning. We talked about Doc's awesome work. We talked about some photography news, and we spiraled off into a tangent. The only thing I didn't do is do a whole lot of erroneous sound bites.
I can't go to sleep without my nine guys.
And that makes quota.
What was that from?
That is from Dora the Explorer.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
I was watching that with my daughter, and when I heard that, I'm like, holy crap. I rewound it and just recorded it with my iPhone. My daughter didn't know what I was doing. My wife thought it was kind of mundane. Then I played it back for her, just that one little clip. And then she got the joke.
I hate Dora. I really do.
Rubbish!
Yeah, it's pretty bad. To quote my daughter,
I just think you're blue.
That's what it is. Anyway, Doc, why don't you tell the world where they could find you on this awesome interwebs?
I'm at Doc Pop on everything. And docpop.org if you want to read longer stuff.
Sweet. And Maud, where can they find you?
Maud Byrne. Ah, yeah, this probably should have been more there. How about Instagram? There you go.
Yeah, because that's all you're able to be found on.
Maudbyrne.com. I don't know why. I keep wanting to slip into that. One of these days, damn it. One of these days.
Yeah, it won't happen. Anyway, Jill, where can they find you?
You can find me at Instagram at Joseph Furrer.
And how about you, Matt?
I'm all over the place. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Flickr, M. Hoffman Photo.
Very cool. And you can find me, Mark Sadowski, on twitter.com/mostlymarcus. If you want to check out the show notes that I might or might not do, spoiler, probably not, you could all find it all on lenswipe.net. Actually, I've been posting some of my artwork on LensWipe. So take that for what it's worth. I'm getting back into the whole drawing swing of things. But anyway, you could also, if you want to email the show, you could always contact us at lenswipepodcast@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter and Facebook. Just look for The LensWipe. And that's it. Any parting words before I fumble around and look for our closing music?
Good luck with the snow.
Oh, God help us. I know. All right, that's good. We'll end it there.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, head over to iTunes and leave us a review and a 5-star rating. See you next week.